Welcome to the Social Work Social Podcast. My name is Melanie Matthews, and I'm a registered social worker, as well as your host for this podcast. The Social Work Social is a place to explore the role of social workers in mental health treatment, social justice and advocacy, and other aspects of community work. But social workers rarely work in isolation, so we'll be talking not just to social workers, but other professionals and people with lived experience to learn about their understanding of mental health and mental health treatment. Before we begin today's episode, I have two disclaimers to make. First, you should be aware that all the information presented in this podcast is specific to Ontario, Canada, unless otherwise specified in the episode. Different professionals follow different rules and restrictions dictated by the regulatory body in their area. The second disclaimer is that nothing in this podcast should be considered medical advice or mental health treatment. Your mental health is unique, so what we talk about in this episode may not be quite right for supporting your mental health in the best way possible. So if you're interested in any of the topics presented here and want to know more about if the treatment options are right for you, be sure to get in contact with a professional directly. Now, let's get started on today's episode. In this episode, we talk to Shannon. If you listen to the last three episodes with authors from The Great Canadian Woman, She Is Strong and Free, Volume 3, this name may be ringing a bell for you. All three authors mention the name Shannon and how she was a supportive person throughout the time they spent writing their stories. Shannon was also a source of support, encouragement, and hope while I was writing my story as well. We are incredibly fortunate that Shannon is going to share her story with us in this episode. She speaks to us about her experience with loss and how she coped. There's a trigger warning for grief and loss in this episode.
Hi, my name is Shannon, and I'm a mom of three incredible humans and a grandma to two little ones, and they are my heart and soul. I come from a large, very close-knit family, and I've lived in Calgary for over 30 years, but I grew up in Saskatchewan, and I'm a prairie girl at heart, love the wide open spaces of that, and love the mountains too, but wide open spaces is my jam. I worked in the medical field for just over 20 years. And then during the pandemic, I switched careers. I'm now the director of the publishing house at the GCW Publishing. And I'm also a speaker, an author, and a grief advocate.
You have had a lot of things going on in your life, and a lot of things in the pandemic too. You are a busy woman.
Yes, I like to keep busy.
So tell me about what your experience with mental health has been like, because you really did touch on the grief. So how did you end up getting involved in doing grief advocacy work?
Sure. Like everybody, I mean, I'm 57, so I've lived life. And during that time, I've experienced grief in different ways. One of them was my dad, and he died it was quick, and we weren't expecting it, and kind of a circumstance out of our control. And that was really my first experience with deep grief, but also almost like traumatic grief, like sudden and shocking. And during that time, I realized, well, some of the things just society in general believes about grief for me wasn't true, like the five stages of grief, or like after the first year, it's all done kind of thing. And then 7 years ago, my daughter died. So then I was kind of thrown back into that. And again, it was sudden and unexpected and traumatic. So it really started to hit home that people's concept of grief isn't really, like, it's not like in the movies, it's not even in books, and even the textbook stuff, although accurate, it's not, for me, it wasn't completely true. And then through speaking, so I mostly speak about grief and moving forward and the strength that it takes to do that. I like to recognize that grief is different for every single person. It doesn't matter if you're in the same family, because you have a different relationship with that person who's died, different experiences with them, and that sort of thing. Plus also, I really think that people need to know it's okay to feel the feelings of grief, that it's not wrong. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be happy. And in doing that, it's a way to work through it. Now that I say that, it's not that it comes to an end, which is also something that before all these events happened, I thought, well, you know, you kind of get through it and then you move on. And of course you still miss them, but you know, but then after experiencing such heartbreak myself, I realized like, it's just becomes part of you. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to be happy and sad at the same time. It's just getting to allow the happy back in is really, really, I think, my true advocacy with grief is to make sure people understand, yes, you're sad, but it's okay to be happy. Because I remember the first time that I laughed after Katie died, and I felt awful. Like, I felt so guilty. I felt like, oh my God, like I should never be happy again. How could I be this awful person? All of those feelings, which, you know, in hindsight, were all valid. Like, those were just feelings that came up, and feelings are feelings. They're like, you can't run away from them. So I like to encourage people to sit in them, but don't stay in them. Work through it.
I like what you said about the feelings are feelings part, because feelings are just that. They're feelings. They're not right and they're not wrong. They just are. And it's okay to experience, you know, whatever it is that's coming up for you at the time. And it was interesting how you were talking about how society has this kind of expectation for how people experience grief. And I was reflecting on that, and I was thinking, I can't remember what the last TV show I was watching, but I feel like it comes up in pretty much every TV show, is when there's a loss, is you see, you know, that romanticized version of grief where there's a single tear running down the person's face, and then it gives them the strength to take on whatever challenges in front of them, and they persevere and come out stronger, and then we never hear about the loss again. And I feel like that's something that people really internalize, is that romanticized ideal about grief.
Yes, definitely. And that has come up actually a lot of times when I've spoken or worked with people, and it's, they think they're doing it wrong. And because it's not like, exactly like you said, it's not romanticizing it, and that it continues on. Like, why isn't a lot of people that I have conversations with, they're years into their grief, like 2-3 years. And they're like, what is going on? Like, I thought after I hit all the first anniversaries of everything, like it will all be good. And that's kind of the same thing you were saying. It's just like, you know, it should just all fade away and be okay. And it does fade away in that you come to terms with it, hopefully. Like, there's a lot of people that get stuck in it, but I don't think that they're necessarily stuck. It's just that they're holding on to the last bit that they have of their person. And their death is the last part of that person, right? So it's takes a lot of inner work to realize that, yes, that's part of them, but there is also so much more to them, and to not necessarily focus on how they died. Like, that's what worked for me, is yes, they died. Like, I understand that. Like, I know my truth, but also there's so much more to them. There's so much more to their life. So that's what I choose to focus on. And so they still come up in conversation all the time, my dad and my daughter, because they're still part of our world. It's just, they're not in our world. But yeah, the romanticizing of it is definitely something that's difficult for people who are maybe trying to support you, because they know that as well. Like, they know the romanticized part of it too. So they don't understand how, you know, maybe in the second year, you're doing great for the most part, and then you just crash one day and you're like back in that darkness, and they don't understand, because the day before you were just laughing, for example. Like, what's going on? Well, nothing's going on. You're grieving. I mean, it's just another expression of your love.
I think that's something that people often don't understand when we're talking about these like models of any sort of behavior. Like, you were talking about the 5 stages of grief, and there's a similar model for, you know, the stages of addictions recovery as well. And people think that that's a straightforward linear process. You go through step one and then step two and step three all the way to the end, and then you're cured. And that's not really the case. There isn't a cure at the end. There isn't ever a time when you're finished. There's always that moving back and forth. And that must be very confusing for people who think that they're grieving wrong because they're not moving through the steps, quote unquote, properly.
I hear that all the time, and I experienced it myself. And also, just off the top of my head, I can't think of one of them, but like there's other stages that you can experience because each grief is so individual. So I wish I could remember one, but I remember thinking, well, wait a minute, this isn't in the five stages. Why am I feeling this way? Okay, I'm totally doing it wrong, like blah, 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 all this self-talk that, you know, and I remember thinking one night, like, I can't even grieve right. Like, what is going on in my world? And I just feel like I need to share that kind of information, not for people like for the attention part of it, just because it was really something that I looked for when I was going through it. You know, I did all the Google searches. I looked through all the Facebook groups. I went to different therapists and I just really, really struggled to find the answers that I needed. And again, everybody's so individualistic with their grief that, you know, hopefully they'll find really great help right away, but it's hard. And like anything, you just need to keep searching. But I do find, I'm not sure, maybe you can give some insight into this for me, because I have never asked a therapist this, but like, it's not that the therapist was doing anything wrong or I was doing anything wrong. It wasn't the right fit. But also I got really tired of sharing my story in that, like to that depth. So I had to like step away for a little while and just stop searching for someone to help me. I just needed to rest, if that makes sense. So is that something that is normal with people trying to find the right therapist or right help?
100%, absolutely. And people move through different therapists at different stages of their life as well. I've been through therapy, of course, myself. I think that most therapists probably have. And I saw different therapists at different stages of my life, depending on what I needed in that moment. And actually what you just said there about not wanting to tell your story again, because it's so exhausting to have to retell the same traumatic story over and over again, that really resonated with me in terms of my last experience in therapy, because I was doing some trauma therapy with a truly wonderful therapist, but I didn't want to tell my story anymore. And so they were a brilliant therapist and actually gave me the space to not tell my story. Oh. We were doing trauma therapy work for about a year, and I don't think they ever knew what actually happened to me. And that was okay. But brilliant therapist. I don't know if I could do that as a therapist. I think that would be extraordinarily difficult. But it does kind of illustrate that need that people have to be understood without having to re-traumatize themselves by telling their story again. So absolutely. And moving through different therapists is totally fine. I think that people sometimes have this perception that, oh, I found the person that works for me. I have to see them for like the rest of my life. And I mean, that might be the case for some people, but for other people, stopping and starting therapy, switching to someone who has a different perspective, taking a break for a little while, totally fine. Absolutely normal. There's no right way to do
that. Yeah, right. Right. With everything I get. Well, really with everything, not just grief or trauma or anything, but as you grow and learn and peel those layers off, of course you become a different person. Like I'm not the same person I was when I was 20. Doesn't matter what I experienced. I'm just not the same person because I'm that much older and have lived life. So that's really good to know. I'm going to remember that.
Well, it's also a good thing that we're recording this right now because you can also go back.
I can just tell friends to go listen to this recording, listen to this podcast. Yeah, it'll be great.
Yeah, something that really resonated with me as well, just as I'm sitting here reflecting on my own experiences with grief, was when you talked about how sometimes people return to grief at different stages in their life, because that definitely happened with me because I lost my grandfather. He died very suddenly and traumatically when I was 21, and I'm 30 now. 2 years ago, I got married and I really wanted him to be there. Absolutely, I did. And so even though it had been quite a fair amount of time since he had died, I did return to that grief for a little while to say, this was an important moment and he's not here for it. And that sucks.
Yes. And I think that is such a valid thing to let people know that it is. In fact, I had written that down because my son just recently got married. And my oldest daughter also got married a few years ago as well. And I mean, it's an extremely happy occasion. And we were surrounded by family and friends, and it was amazing. But there was still a piece of my heart that was sad. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, happy and sad can live together. And I think too, even if it's not sad, like if people want to think about it as happy in grief or whatever, in grief, because I honestly, I know I said this earlier, but I truly believe grief is just another expression of love. So why is it bad that that was part of that day? It's not. It's just, we wish they were there. And what's wrong with that? Of course we do. Even if they were somebody that was in another country and couldn't get to the wedding, well, we wish they were there. So why, you know, if they're not here on earth with us anymore, why isn't it okay? And why do people think like, oh, don't talk about them because like that will make them sad? Well, no. What makes me sad is when people don't talk about them. Honestly, like, yes, I might be emotional when someone brings up Katie or brings up my dad or whatever, but it's not a bad emotion. It's nice to know other people are thinking about them.
I think that there is a really big push for people to try to suppress any sort of negative emotions and to not trigger other people to feel negative emotions as well. But I say the word negative emotion, and really, I don't think that sadness is a negative emotion. I don't think there are really any negative emotions. They right. just are, and they're part yeah. of the human experience. And we're allowed to have them. It's such a taboo thing to bring up grief. Again, I think like you said, because people don't want to upset anyone. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be upset. It's okay to express your love in that way. It's okay to miss people. We don't need to suppress that.
No, I love that what you said about giving permission almost, like, and it does when someone, because you kind of feel not ignored. I don't mean that, but like it's hard for people to be in your presence, especially early on when the trauma first happens or the grief first happens. It's very difficult for people to be in your space because I think you literally ooze sadness, right? Which is totally understandable. And it's lovely when people allow you to feel those feelings, but you soon learn what group of people or what person you're able to just let yourself be true with and other ones that you have to step back. And it is about their comfort, and it sucks sometimes because you're so full of this grief and you know that person doesn't want you to share it or whatever. And then it's almost like another thing that you have to then take care of, if that's the right word, is like you have to care that you're not going to hurt them or you're not going to make them feel uncomfortable. So, and I think that's why a lot of people, and again, like I'm not a therapist or anything, I've just experienced grief, but I think that's why a lot of people step back, like stop, you know, going out as much and all of that, is because it's hard to take on another person's like uncomfortableness. And so you have to put on that mask or whatever you want to call it. And of course, in society, you do, like when you go back to work and when you're in the grocery store. And I mean, I cried at work. I cried at the grocery store. I did my best to not have a meltdown or whatever in public because it is scary for people and it is uncomfortable for them. But, you know, you shouldn't have to like pent it all up because you run the risk, I think, too, of putting a wall around yourself. And that's not good. Because then you're blocking out all the hurt, pain, anger, sadness, but you're also blocking out all the love and the happiness and joy and excitement.
Knowing those safe spaces to be able to be really true to your emotions is really important. And being able to unblock yourself or unmask that grief in a place where you're able to be supported is important. Because I think that we get really caught up in that. Do you know how many people have apologized to me for crying in a therapy session? Like probably nearly all of them, nearly everyone who's cried in a session with me has at some point while they're expressing that emotion said, oh, I'm sorry for getting so emotional. It's like, man, that's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
Why I'm here is for you to be able to express your emotions. And the fact that people feel the need to apologize for it to me feels as though they're holding onto that mask a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think too, it just takes one or two times when, you know, you get that shocked expression, or because most times I don't go into the detail of why Katie died, but just the fact that my daughter died is very scary for a lot of people, especially if they're parents, because then that then becomes, oh, it's a possibility in my world then. And I never say that, but I mean, I guess it's the truth, but who wants to even invite that concept into their life? So I think that a lot of the apologies, and I'm sure I've done it, and a lot of times it was because I knew it would make them feel so uncomfortable, but I don't know, sometimes it just has to come out. And I mean, there's just some reasons why you need to share that information as well. But it is kind of strange that they would say sorry with their therapist, but I'm sure I've done it as well. It just is kind of a knee-jerk reaction after a while, because you just don't want anybody to feel the kind of intense pain that you're in, I guess.
Probably a Canadian thing as well, if we're being
true. Yes.
You did say something interesting too about the different, I don't want to say kinds of grief, but the way that we put grief in different boxes between expected deaths and unexpected deaths. So, I mean, I spoke about my experience with my grandfather dying, and I think that people's reaction to that is quite different because he was older, he had some health problems, it was an unexpected death, but in the grand scheme of things, it was more likely that, you know, an elderly person would die and that would be expected rather than a young person. So like, for example, talking about my grandfather dying and a friend I had who died very suddenly in her early 30s because of traumatic ectopic pregnancy. So it was very, very difficult. And the way that people react to both of those stories is very different. I think that kind of comes along with that discomfort that you were saying, that inviting that idea into your life. It's okay to think about how elderly people will die one day, but thinking about young people dying suddenly and traumatically, that's really uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah. The circle of life is not right or doesn't feel right then when someone young dies. I think that is what a lot of people struggle with. And, you know, and I mean, I suppose there's arguments for both ways. I mean, the elderly people have lived a full life, or so people think. And, you know, the younger people didn't have an opportunity to experience other things. But really, it's about the person that's grieving. Like, you don't know what the relationship to that elderly person was. I mean, I had a very extremely close relationship with my dad. And it took years before I stopped, like, that, you know, when you're like, oh, you know, something's wrong with my car, I'll just call dad. Oh, yeah, no, can't do that. So, you know, it doesn't matter their age. It's whatever your grief is. And also, you don't know what the relationship is. I too had a very close relationship with my daughter, but there are some people that didn't have a close relationship with their child that died. And then you have like guilt and anger and all that stuff on top of that, which I'm not experiencing because I did have such a close relationship, but it doesn't negate either one of our griefs. They're just different because we're different. So I totally get what people mean by, you know, when it's the elderly person as opposed to a younger one, but I don't know, grief is grief to me. If you're sad, you're sad.
It goes back to, there's no wrong way to grieve. It's very dependent on your own individual experience, and regardless of the way people are reacting to your grief, wrong the way that you're feeling.
Yeah, I agree.
So that being said then, what did you find helpful when you were moving through your grieving process? Was there anything that you found really supportive?
Honestly, I mean, just the regular things, I guess it would be regular, like having my two other children really close to me. I tried to be as conscientious as I could about that, and not like, as a parent, you don't want to dump your stuff, whether it's your grief or whatever, onto your children. You don't want them carrying your burden, kind of thing. So I did try to be conscientious of it, but, you know, we had good communication, and so they needed to be with me as much as I needed to be with them. So we spent a lot of time together. I went for a walk every day. I have two very large dogs. So I was forced, literally forced, to get out of bed feed them, let them out. You know, they needed their walks. And that was huge for me because I didn't spend a day in bed after my dad or Katie died because I had these pets to take care of. Just like if you have kids or other things that you have to take care of, that they can't take care of themselves, you have to do it. So not that I would recommend people go and get pets if they, you know, not that it's good and bad if they want, because it was also draining and exhausting and just one more thing to deal with and that kind of thing. But it forced me to go outside. It forced me to see life, like see birds, see the trees, see the flowers, you know, feel the sunshine. Otherwise, I think I would have just stayed in my house. And it was very healing for me. So finding what worked for me, really just finding that one or two people that were okay that I could talk to. And they wouldn't necessarily give me advice. They would just listen. They would just ask me how I'm doing, but they would listen as opposed to how lots of people say, oh yeah, how are you doing? And they keep walking. And that's something that I've worked on myself because I noticed I was doing it too, just in life in general. Like, hey, how's it going? And not even stop walking to hear their answer. So finding supportive people. I did look, like I said, for therapists and that kind of thing. So I just kept looking until I found what worked for me. And it was more of a naturopathic kind of route. And it just worked for me. And then I became a speaker. I wrote my story with GCW Publishing, Great Canadian Woman. And all of that is just healing. Like it peeled layers back, right? It allowed me to share my story, speak my truth, but it also then connected me with other people who, you know, would maybe just send me a message or who read my story or heard me speak. And a lot of times, honestly, it was people who were supporting someone in grief. So I wasn't necessarily talking to the actual grievers, but it was pretty amazing just to see like light bulb moments go off when speaking with these people and say, oh, okay, like, you know, or you got out of bed and my mom hasn't gotten out of bed since, you know, my brother died. How can I help her? And just being able to be that person to give suggestions or just share a little bit of my story, because it's not necessarily what I did will work for them, but it more gives hope to people. And that was what I was really looking for. It's like, you know, I did meet somebody very shortly after Katie died, and she experienced the same thing with her son, but a year prior to when Katie died. And the first thing I remember thinking after she introduced herself and told me who she was, I thought, oh my God, she's standing. So it gave me hope to know that, oh, in a year, because you don't know, right? Like a lot of times when you're in deep, deep grief, you go minute by minute, hour by hour, finding those people and you don't even have to have a relationship with them, but whether it's on social media or a friend of a friend or through a book, I did a lot of podcasts. I listened, like I tried to find some books, not necessarily technical books, but just books of hope, not even of grief even, but just like trying to find that light again and keep searching, but also remembering to rest. Grief was the hardest thing I've ever experienced, physically, mentally, emotionally, like everything. And I personally, when I'm going through something like that, I tend to stay extremely busy. And that's just my way of not dealing with it, I guess. I don't know. But came to a point where I realized, no, I just need to stop. Just stop and not come to terms with it, but come to terms with it. Like, this is my reality. And then now what? Now what was a very common question I asked myself, because if you can break it down, instead of looking at the big picture, it's like, oh, I have to survive this. Just know I need to get through today. What needs to be done today? And just finding those little steps. And, you know, I talked about it a little bit in my story, but also like on most interviews or talks that I give, I really like to stress that, like, it's the little things. And most importantly, you need to be kind to yourself. Like, you've gone through something so hard and so sad, and so put any other feeling behind that. And it just takes time and it sucks. And I just wish two people would be more honest about it. It's like, yes, it'll get better. But right now it sucks. And it's okay for it to suck because, you know, it's a really hard experience. So what did I do? I did those things. I really tried to focus eventually on my sleep and healthier eating, or eating at all. Lots of people stop eating because they can't. I was more the sugar rush person because I had zero energy. I wasn't sleep, you know, all those things. So at some point you just get to a point where you want to start feeling a little bit better. And yeah, surround myself with good people, strong people, people willing to let me talk.
That sense of connection is so important. Even if someone doesn't have the same story, just being able to hear that sense of hope and that other people have gone through those emotions as well. I really do like the idea of sharing stories as a way to connect and being able to put out there, you know, a book or be on a podcast or speak. Or I know for me, one of the things that I did for after my grandfather died is I got a tattoo on my chest and it's a dung beetle, which people are always asking me like, oh, is that a butterfly? Do you have a dragonfly? What is that? No, it's a dung beetle. It's the beetle that like rolls shit around in Egypt. That's what it is. And people ask me about it. And it actually gives me a nice opportunity to be able to tell, not the whole story, but connect a little bit. Say it's a memorial for my grandfather. It's representative of a gift that my grandmother had given to him that was really, really meaningful. And it's a nice thing to hold on to and to be able to share with others. It's something that keeps him present in my life and lets me make connections with other people over that. And so he hated tattoos and he would have hated this tattoo, but I think that he would have really appreciated the way that I connect with people over it. And that's the biggest thing, is connection.
I agree. I got a tattoo right after Katie died as well. She had a saying, well, she also had a tattoo with a saying that she created. So I have the same tattoo. And exactly, I don't go into great detail if people ask me about it, but even just for me, when I see it, it's just like, oh, hey, baby, you know, like it's just keeping them close. For me, it's keeping her close. So yes, connection is huge. The biggest part of it, because you do feel so alone, I believe, like a lot of times in your life with whatever things you're going through, you can feel quite alone. So connection is so important.
If you had to sum up your message to people who are grieving or people who are supporting a person who's grieving in just a couple of sentences, what would you want to say to them?
I'd want to acknowledge that it's hard. It's hard. And like I was saying before, you need to be kind to yourself. You need to allow yourself to feel. You can get really stuck in the darkness, and it's not a great place to stay. It's hard to climb out of the darkness, but it's also hard to stay there. Be kind to yourself. Reach out. Yeah, and just try and find some happy.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, Shannon.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on.
Thank you so much to Shannon for sharing such an important story and message. Grief and loss are difficult topics, but through open conversations, we can support one another through the journey of healing. If you'd like to hear more from Shannon, you can follow her on Instagram at @IamShannonMiller. If you'd like to see what publishing project she's working on, you can follow at GCW Publishing House. Thanks for listening to the Social Work Social podcast. By sharing information and stories, we hope that you will gain new knowledge and empathy for those who are different from you. We all have unique experiences with mental health based on our backgrounds, experiences, and how we're impacted by the society we live in. What unites us is that we are all deserving of mental health support that is appropriate for our circumstances, accessible, and feels good. Tune in next Friday for another episode.